Judy, before we go any further, would you please give us the date that your son was born?
I was married on January 8, 1946. My son was born December the 28th, 1948. In those days, everyone that I knew, when you were having a child, you had a nurse come in and help you with the child. And I did likewise. I probably kept her a little longer than I really wanted to, but I had so many responsibilities in the house. Unfortunately, it was easier to get a nurse to take care of your child than to get a cook to cook for that entire household. And when I say that entire household, there was myself, my husband, the child, my mother-in-law, and three nurses around the clock. And I at one time did have a cook, but she didn't last long because they just refused to be cooking for all that help. So that I became the chief cook, and as a result, I learned to enjoy cooking to a point. The thing that did bother me was the fact that I had to have other people doing what I really wanted to do, caring for my child, while I was doing the things that I would have preferred to have help do. However, even though I did have a nurse girl, I spent a great deal of time with him. And I mean, I set aside a certain time of the day when she was off for several hours and it was just me and the child. And I still would feed him and take care of him. I must have kept the nurse girl for about 2 months. And then I was doing everything else with the child. I had a maid in the house who did the cleaning. I still managed to do the cooking also. At one point I was having a problem and I had to have surgery. Frankly, I had to have a hysterectomy. I was trying to have more children, but I had a large fibroid tumor. And at the time that I had to go into the hospital for surgery, I did again have to get a nurse girl for my son. That only lasted for several months until I was able to care for him again. As I said, by the time he was 3 years old, we then sent my mother-in-law to the home for the aged. She had lived with me, actually, for almost 6.5 years of my marriage. And then she lived at the home for the aged for another 7 years. I had a good time with my son. We did a lot of things together. We would go ice skating. We would go sled riding. We played together a lot. I had a lot of children in from the neighborhood or friends' children. I mean, we had a big playroom down in the basement, but there was an entrance from the street, windows in the basement. We fixed it up so the kids could come in and play with him. He had kids sleep over frequently. Eric Schultz and Joey Broido and Johnny Russlander, and we had a lot of fun. I mean, I enjoyed the activity of the boys around.
What sort of interaction did your husband, tell us a little bit about your husband. He was a physician.
My husband, when I married him, was head of the pathology division at the Allegheny General Hospital. He later became director of all the laboratories on the death of Dr. Haythorne. Samuel Haythorne was his predecessor. Bob then became director of the William H. Singer Memorial Research Institute. He was in charge of all the clinical work in the laboratories and all the research that was done at the hospital at that time. Frankly, in order to enhance our income, in those days, pathologists were not being paid well. Small towns were paying much better than large cities. Bob did have a private practice in his house. And as I said before, there was a separate entrance, and he did see patients from about 2:30 to 5, 3 days a week. We also used to drive up to New Kensington every Friday night, where he did the sections, did the microscopic and gross pathology sections for the hospital there, because that was another way of enhancing his income, and I would drive up with him every Friday night. Bob was very, very busy. However, after he finished that office, he did take time to play with Myron and fondle him. But truthfully, as far as ever giving a bottle or changing a diaper, that was not his style. And I don't know too many men who were doing it at that point in time. If they were, I didn't know about it. So I never felt that I was burdened and that he was not assuming some responsibility. I just expected him to be that way. And frankly, my mother had always waited on my father hand and foot, and that's the way I was raised. And I did likewise. If I had my hands in my meatloaf and my husband came in the kitchen and said, "May I have a glass of water?" I would wash my hands and give him a glass of water. I'm sure girls nowadays would take the meatloaf and throw it at their husbands. But I didn't know that in those days, and I'm just as happy that I didn't. My husband and I enjoyed each other. I found him intellectually stimulating. He found me, so I believe. There was also a great physical attraction between the two of us. We had fun together. He had a delicious sense of humor. And we'd sort of play jokes on one another and do crazy gifts for one another. And we had a lingo all of our own that no one would understand, and you just kept it secret because, we had fun together. We didn't travel a great deal because actually had too many responsibilities. But we did get away, at least in the winter. I mean, I would take my child to Florida to visit my parents. Later on, I would take an apartment in the same building with my parents. My husband would come down for several weeks then. But I would always go on ahead because he couldn't take that much time off. As our child got older, we did go off, in the winter places for a couple of weeks. But we never went for any extended period of time. I guess while my husband was living, I was in Europe twice. Once we went to a medical meeting in Italy and then went roaming around after we left Florence. Another time we went on a pip trip to France. I've become a gypsy ever since, however. If I could well afford it, I would be home 1 week of the month, pay my bills, meet my obligations, and go off again. I do travel a great deal. I enjoy it. I find it stimulating. I have a great curiosity about the world. My husband always said to go someplace with me was like going to with a child. And I would say, how lucky can you get? Because I get enthusiastic. I will never get blasé about anything. So let me say this. You want to go back to my work experience of when I quit and what I started doing later?
Well, I think it's a good time to start on your
affiliations
career
elsewhere.
And affiliations.
Well, then after my husband died, as I told you, I was at the time working at Louise Child Care Center. I stayed on there for another... he died October of 1975. I stayed on there, I guess, till the end of 1977. I was going back and forth a great deal. My father was ill, and I would go on weekends to Florida quite frequently just to spend the time and still come back in time to work by 2 days a week. They wanted me to come on. We had a new head of social work department there. They wanted me to work full-time, and I refused to work full-time, and that's when I decided I was going to quit. Frankly, at that point in time, I was enjoying my work with the clients. I was not enthusiastic about the woman who came in to take over the social work department. In fact, she did disrupt it because after I left, many other people left because of her. At that point in time, I was at loose ends, and I had to do something. I went to Irv Goldberg at Montefiore Hospital. This is confidential. And I had an idea. I said, "Irv, you need a patient representative. You need an ombudsman. You really need a person who will represent the patient and be concerned with the patient's needs." I said, you know, even as a doctor's wife, having had experiences in hospitals myself, I do feel that there is a need for a patient. They're frightened, they're bewildered, they're in a strange environment. Well, his response to me is, we have a wonderful PR department and we really don't need anyone. He didn't understand at that time that I was not interested in how they were presenting themselves to the community, but rather how the patient could interact in the hospital. And he couldn't see it. Of course, now this is very popular, not only in hospitals, but in industries. And therefore, I worked there for a short time doing volunteer work, going around and questioning patients, but it was just busy work. And I learned at that point that you never do a volunteer job in an area in which you worked as a professional. For two reasons. First of all, you're limited, and people as a volunteer don't quite respect what you're doing on the same basis. And secondly, which happened at Montefiore, the woman I was working under didn't have any of the training I had, and you become a threat to the professional person if you yourself have had an advanced career and experience. Finally decided to go to the museum, and I applied to be a when my husband died, I applied to be a docent at the museum. I had always enjoyed art. I had taken art courses in college. I would spend my time, my happiest days have always been spent in libraries and in art galleries, totally by myself. I just enjoyed it. I would spend hours at the photograph library when I was going to Penn. So I did apply to be a docent at the museum right after Bob died. That fall, they called me, interviewed me, and took me on. But I could not do it because their training days were the days that I was working. So I had to refuse them. So then, when I quit, couldn't find anything in social work that I thought would please me, I went back to the museum and said, I can be a docent now. And they said, we're sorry, but we're not having another docent class. And they actually didn't for 7 years. So I started working at the gift shop there. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. The woman who's in charge of the gift shop, Carol Kamen, is a wonderful merchant. And I enjoyed the atmosphere and the gifts and the whole ambience of the place. I mean, it's a wonderful place to be. I went on a trip in the spring of 78, I think, with David Wilkins, an art trip to Washington when the new gallery, the East Wing, opened. And on that trip, I met a young girl by the name of Ellen Toker. We got to be rather friendly. And at that time, she was actually second to Jim Walton at the Carnegie. She was in charge of practically everything. The gift shops, the cafeteria, the membership of the volunteer training, the travel films, the in-house tours, the tours that were taken outside. And she asked me to come to work for her. And this went on for months. And I said, Ellen, I am not going to work for anyone. At that point in time, I didn't want to be accountable to anyone. And I still don't like to be accountable to anybody. After a while, she finally said to me, Judy, would you just help me out? So I said, what do you want me to do? She says, I really can't handle everything else that I'm handling and the travel films. So I took on the job of being the travel film coordinator at the Carnegie. I guess I started there in 78. And I have been doing this job for 15 years. Now, what I do as a travel film coordinator, I run the whole travel film department myself. Other than stenographic help that sometimes types something for me, I do everything else. I go to a meeting every year with the travel film people, which it's involving the speakers, the sponsors, such as National Geographic, college clubs, universities, service groups, the Carnegie. We're the sponsors. We're the people who put on the shows. The speakers have their own group. They have agents. They have their own group. And the umbrella agency is called Intrafilm. And Intrafilm has a convention every year in a different city. At the end of this week, I'm going to Palm Springs to the meeting. I spend 4 mornings from 8:30 to 1 o'clock doing nothing but watching films. There are 15-minute excerpts of people's films with in-person narration, and this is where I make my decisions. I choose the films, I choose the speakers, I arrange the schedule, I negotiate the contracts, I write up the publicity, I put out a little book called Passport, and I write that completely myself. I also write the introductions. I introduce the speaker on Sunday, the initial performance. I have people at the other places. We have two performances Monday at Mount Lebanon, two performances back at the Carnegie on Tuesday. Wednesday we go to North Hills for two performances, and Thursday night at Baldwin. And I give these, supervise these people that do the introductions.
Pardon me, is this on a volunteer
this
basis?
This is totally on a volunteer basis.
I'd like to hear your reaction of doing this kind of professional volunteerism. Do you have any feeling of resentment in regard to not being paid
no,
for this?
No feeling whatsoever about not being paid. And I'll tell you why. It's not in a profession that I was trained for. Therefore, I'm not, as I told you, my experience elsewhere in trying to do something in a profession I was trained for. No, I have no resentment. I asked to do this on this basis. When I was first asked by Ellen Toker, she wanted me to work for her. I relish my independence. I relish my freedom of mobility. I relish that I'm not accountable to anyone in my life. I must admit, this is my own Mr. Gus. And I feel that this way, I plan my time. I can give them 20 hours a week, or I can give them 2 hours a week. But I get my job done, and I don't have to apologize to anybody. I have no one breathing down my back. And they just know it's done, and no one knows what's, I mean, I give them the reports, I give them the information, and the job is done.
This is a very good perspective on volunteerism and what makes it enjoyable for people.
Well, I have friends who think, most of my friends, think that I'm really out of my mind giving this time and not getting paid. But I jokingly say, well, I'd pay them to keep me on. The truth of the matter is that what they would pay me would be so minimal that it would be an insult, frankly. I don't need that extra money to put me in a different bracket. And it would be, as I said, minimal. It would be insulting. Secondly, if it's not a job, as I said before, no one's checking my hours. No one's, I'm not accountable to anybody. I will say this, however, and there are times within recent years that I haven't resented that I'm not being paid. But I don't think the people in charge presently have any understanding or comprehension of the type of time and effort I put into this job. I mean, the day that I decide to leave, they'll have to employ someone on a full-time basis at a very good salary.
I'm sure that's true.
I know it. And it will continue, and everyone will be pleased. I struggle for every extra dollar that I try to get for my speakers, or for equipment, or for publicity. And it's really a joke, and I'm struggling. I will tell you this, I can show you letters. I have a reputation in the industry of being very kind to the speakers. I am very concerned about them. For many years, I'm given no expense account. I didn't routinely take everyone for dinner, but those people that I found particularly interesting, and the fact that the museum didn't offer any hospitality, I was frequently, more often than not, took them for dinner. I've slowed down on that a great deal. Now we have a cafe that serves brunch at the museum. So sometimes, if it's convenient for them and convenient for me, I'll take a speaker at the museum's expense. I was questioned about it once, but that is settled now, and I will take them to brunch in the cafe. Just recently, I took a man to dinner who did me a great favor, because for the first time in 15 years, a speaker got sick. I got a call on a Friday afternoon that he had a heart attack. And with 20 long-distance calls made from my home, I got a speaker for that Sunday. Some people thought he was wonderful. I never hear of the letters that go in. This is amusing. I never get from the woman in charge of the department that under which I work, I never get a transcript or a sample of a letter that goes in complimentary. I know some do. I only get letters on my desk of people who call in and complain. But
does
it's amusing.
Does this frustrate you?
What?
Does this frustrate you?
I just say to her, well, that's what my source race is. Thank God we don't all like the same thing. Does it frustrate me? It annoys me at times. It annoys me frequently. And there are many things there under the present person that I work under that have annoyed me a great deal, which at times I may give it up. But I'll do it when I'm ready. But it's not been, the last few years, as pleasant to work there as it was to work under different people who were heading that department. And that's as far as I'd like to go, because any more would be revealing certain problems that exist there, which I feel a sense of obligation not to discuss. There is a situation there that is not pleasant, but it's not pleasant just for me. It's not pleasant for many people.
Do you do other things at the museum other than the...
I'm also a docent. Center. Oh, I forgot to tell you. Then 7 years later, they decided to take a docent class, so I went back and applied again. And they said to me, how can you do the travel films and the docenting too? I said, I can. So I took the course, which was a year's course. I had to go every Monday. The course was very intensive, a lot of homework. But as I told you, I love study. And after you finish the course, you still have to go every Monday for lectures, for symposiums. You have to figure your day from about 10 to at least 2:30. You also choose a day a week when you do your tours. And on that day, they can assign you any tours that they wish, and you also have a conference with other lectures and symposiums on the day of your tours. My day is Thursday. I find that I'm able to do both. I am the type of person that likes to be occupied. I like to have structure to my life. I like to know Monday I do this, Tuesday I do that. In the meantime, up until March, I was playing tennis 2 to 3 times a week until my hip got so bad that I had to quit. And I had a hip replacement this August, and I'm doing exceedingly well. And I will get back after the first of the year to Club One to do my swimming and my bicycling and my treadmill and my Nordic track. And the doctor says, I can play tennis, but I'm going to wait a while to do that. He said, I can play a friendly game of doubles, but he doesn't know that you don't play friendly games of tennis. People want you to run and jump, and so I'm limited there.
Have you had any interest in participating in the religious aspect of the community?
Frankly, I have a great feeling about my Jewishness. I mean, when I hear certain friends of mine say, wouldn't it be wonderful to be rich and Gentile, it really bothers me because I've never had any desire to be anything than what I am.